8985735 to make that donation. And have a blessed Sunday. I will see you guys next week.
I wish I could break all the chains holding me. I wish I could say all the things that I should say. Say I'm
Support for KPFK comes in part from the 2025 Indian Film Festival of Los Angeles, presenting its 23rd edition running May 6th through the 10th at Landmark Theater Sunset, and the WGA, celebrating the best of Southern Asian cinema. It will feature 27 films, including world, North American, and U.S. premieres, docs, shorts, panels, and more. Further information is available at www.indianfilmfestival.org and kpfk.org.
We're in this together. Do your part. Help keep KPFK alive. 818-985-5735.
Hi, this is Sally Kirkland, and you're listening to KPFK, radio powered by the people, fiercely independent, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles.
Good Sunday morning to you, and thank you for tuning in to your community radio station, KPFK, as we head into the last week of our spring fun drive. Today, in this next hour, we're going to be bringing you special fun drive programming. It's actually a rebroadcast of Tom Hartman's program from this Friday morning, May the 2nd, and we'll be back to regular programming next week. So now, here's Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
A book for today on the Tom Hartman Book Club is Kingdom of Lies,
Unnerving Adventures in the World of Cybercrime by Kate Fazzini. This is from the preface. It didn't take me long in my career as a cybersecurity executive to figure out everyone was lying to me. The biggest lie of all came at the very beginning, that cybersecurity is hard, too hard, certainly too difficult for someone who lacks years and years of deep technical training. That is no place for writers. That thicket of incomprehensible jargon alone seemed meant to discourage outsiders like me from entering the field. They told me I could never hope to understand the terminology unless I'd worked around it for a very long time. Unless I had a special and complicated certification, unless I knew how to take apart and reassemble a computer, unless I knew how to code in Python and could read it, interpret it, and spot problems on sight. And if I somehow managed to learn the lingo, the learning curve for the rest of it would prove insurmountable. Lies, lies, lies. It's unfortunate because there's a huge gap between the demand for cybersecurity workers and the people available to fill those jobs. I think one of the reasons for that is because people can't imagine themselves doing this kind of work. Can you use a smartphone, make a PowerPoint, think on your feet? Ever organize a night out to the movies with your friends that went well and nobody crashed their car to or from the event? Welcome to the 21st century's hottest career path. Are you able to charm the pants off women? Did you escape an abusive marriage? Have you ever hosted a toddler's birthday party at your home? Honey, I want you on my cybersecurity team. After reading the stories in this book, you will understand that what makes cybersecurity complicated is the complexity of human beings. So if you know how to deal with people, you can handle internet security. If you understand what makes people tick, not only will you be able to recognize a threat, you'll be one step ahead of your adversary. During my career as a cybersecurity executive at multinational corporations, a journalist for Wall Street Journal and later CNBC, and a professor at Georgetown University, I've met a lot of fascinating people. From the hackers who perpetrate malicious attacks to the security professionals who try to prevent these incidents from happening, and the alphabet soup of government agencies that do damage control, at the end of the day, they're all fathers, sons, mothers, sisters, and spouses. In other words, people just like us. Yes, the white hats cross paths with black hats and change alliances more frequently than you might expect, but they're driven by the same desires as the rest of us, even if sometimes it feels as if everyone in cybersecurity is allergic to the truth. As a professional, I was told a great many lies about the field I've grown to love so much. After becoming a journalist on the cybersecurity beat, I was told even more. Here are a few. Let me introduce you to the hacker community. This lie is usually delivered with a wink and a nod from someone who thinks they know every hacker on the planet. The truth of the matter is there is no hacker community. Sure, the guys who make a splash at the big annual conferences might say otherwise. But every country, every state, every faction, every identifying group has its own community of people who hack computers. Some of them are extremely conservative. Others are massively liberal. Some fall in between. Some wear suits and ties and work as lawyers during the day, while others look like everyday citizens and have great people skills as they pursue their idiosyncratic agendas. Some are good guys who got fed up with low pay and boring duties and became criminals. Some are criminals who ended up being good guys. Many start and end their careers on either end of that spectrum. Some, including many you'll meet in this book, are extremely proficient hackers who have no time or inclination to identify with any community at all. As a journalist, I was astonished at the number of people who came out of the woodwork to offer me exclusive access to the hacker community. I couldn't help but notice that the members of the source's hacker community were often people just like him or her. My point is there are many different types of people working in this field, and I can guarantee you that a lot of them are exactly like you. Here's another lie. He's a luminary in the cybersecurity field. He's probably not. Fame and luminescence don't typically intersect in this field. The people I've met who are actual geniuses aren't famous, and most of them don't have social media profiles. They tend not to pontificate on areas outside their expertise. The people who are constantly headlining conferences and who are so often offered up to me for interviews have less insight than those who stay underground. Anything a high-profile hacker is willing to share typically carries with it a massive and crystal-clear agenda that I've learned to spot from a mile away. Even if a conversation is off the record, the intel coming from a top government official or other marquee corporate cybersecurity name carries little novel information. The only people who have illuminated the way for me in this world and in this book have been genuine practitioners who never held a C-level title. You've never heard of them, and because I've changed their names to protect their privacy, you probably never will. They are luminaries not because of the degrees they've collected or the events they've headlined, but because they carry a lantern that guides the path for others. These types of people typically don't have a public relations team. One of my favorite lies, he doesn't know what he's talking about. This one is usually delivered by someone who asserts that he or she knows the cybersecurity field better than anyone else. These people will brag that they know what it's like to be a hacker and can do things that no one else in the room can do. I'm always wary of those who try to establish their bona fides by discrediting the expertise of other cybersecurity professionals. The depth and breadth of this field is so vast that anyone who works in it is an expert at some part of it, and I have yet to meet someone who is an expert at all of it, not even close. Every view of an incident is informed by the reviewer, what he sees, what her level of expertise is, and that changes over time. It's like asking someone who lives in the Plaza to describe Manhattan. The book is Kingdom of Lies by Kate Pazzini.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's the end of the week. It's you and me. No guests today, but there's a lot to talk about. They're coming for the truth tellers. Pam Bondi's plan to jail journalists and execute journalists for treason. This is how democracies die and dictatorships begin. Also, a news summary, dictators love their war parades, and so does Trump. Also, Canada's cutting flights to America for good. They told us goodbye. Remember? And Trump threatens Harvard again. And Bob Kennedy is screwing up an updated COVID vaccine. It's now in jeopardy. I'll tell you about all those things in this hour. And a Trump loyalist eyes a new enemies list. But to start out, this is really concerning. I mean, even the Washington Post did an op-ed about this morning. They're coming after the truth tellers. That's the title over at HartmanReport.com for my daily take. Pam Bondi's plan to jail journalists is how democracies die and dictatorships begin. And basically what happened was Pam Bondi issued a memo rescinding the Biden administration's policies and the policies that we've seen on and off through a number of administrations, that they would not prosecute journalists for refusing to turn over their sources. That, you know, if you don't want to turn over your source, if you're a journalist in America, we're going to respect that. We're going to respect the First Amendment that says that we can't interfere with a free press. And on top of that, she also said that the Justice Department, quote, will not tolerate unauthorized disclosures that undermine President Trump's policies, victimize government agencies, and cause harm to the American people. Since when did the president's policies become sacred and beyond scrutiny? I don't get it. And since when did exposing wrongdoing by our government become a crime against the American people? In fact, she went so far as to say that it could be treason. She's talking about journalists, reporters, being executed for treason. I mean, having whistleblowers is an essential part of American democracy. It's something that we've always defended. I mean, you know, my old buddy Dan Ellsberg was perhaps our most famous whistleblower back in 1971 when he published the Pentagon Papers. He passed away last year. In fact, I heard from him just a few months before he did. You know, when he released the Pentagon Papers, the Nixon administration tried to stop him. They went to court, and the Supreme Court ruled in New York Times versus the United States that upholding the press's right to publish what has been called one of the modern pillars of the First Amendment, rights with respect to freedom of press, is important. The right to publish is an important thing. And history shows that when presidents go nuts about whistleblowers, remember when George W. Bush was going crazy about whistleblowers? Why was it? Because they were pointing out that he was torturing and killing people in black sites around the world illegally, completely unconstitutionally, a violation of the rules of war as well as the rules of our Constitution. I mean, a free press is our early warning system against government overreach and abuse. And journalists, in order to have a free press, have to be able to protect their sources. And now we've got Tulsi Gabbard. She's already referred two intelligence community leakers to the Justice Department for prosecution, and the third referral, she says, is on the way. What we're witnessing is step one in the dictator's playbook. Silence those who tell the truth about your regime. We've seen this pattern in Russia, in Hungary, in Turkey, in multiple other countries. First attack the press, then criminalize dissent, then intimidate lawmakers, lawyers, and judges, and finally consolidate power in the hands of a single leader. I think the most alarming thing here, though, is Bondi's use of the word treason. I mean, that's remarkable. The U.S. Press Freedom Tracker, which documents threats to press freedom, has already condemned Bondi's decision and criticized Republicans in Congress. You know, there was a federal shield law before Congress last year, a federal law that would have permanently protected journalists in the United States. Republicans shot it down in the House and Senate. It died in Congress. You know, Nixon attacked the press. Bush attacked the press. Trump attacked the press. What do these guys have in common? They were all committing crimes. They're all trying to cover up those crimes, and they're all Republicans. I mean, this is the time for polite disagreement and strongly worded letters is over. This is time to stand up. I mean, first, demand that Congress pass a shield law. Second, support independent journalism with your dollars, your attention. Subscribe to your local newspaper. Donate to nonprofit news organizations like ProPublica. Share important stories with your networks. Third, contact your representatives and tell them that protecting press freedom should be a top priority. The phone number for Congress is 202-224-3121. Fourth, prepare to take to the streets if Bondi follows through with their threat to prosecute journalists for treason. And finally, remember that the press isn't perfect, but it's essential. When governments attack journalists, it's almost never because, you know, they're protecting something. It's because they're protecting lies and crimes, typically. It's almost always because the journalists are telling truths that the powerful don't want heard. You know, we stand at a crossroads right now in American history, and Pam Bondi and Donald Trump are showing their true colors. Enough. Enough. Meanwhile, dictators love parades. This is the Army's plans for a potential parade on Trump's birthday call for 6,600 soldiers. I'm wondering why they didn't add another 60, so it could be 6,660 soldiers. I mean, it's just, after all, it's the Trump administration. I mean, anyhow, they want 150 vehicles, 50 helicopters, 7 marching bands, a couple thousand civilians. This is the 250th anniversary of the Army. In theory, Now, I don't recall any point in my life where there was anybody celebrating any anniversary of the Army, but this anniversary of the Army just happens to fall on Donald Trump's birthday. So, really, Trump is doing this as a birthday celebration for himself. It's going to cost tens of millions of dollars. In addition to that, Trump wants to strip reference to veterans from our holidays. You know, November 11th, we call Veterans Day. And Donald Trump wants to change the name from Veterans Day to Victory Day for World War I, which is where it started. You know, the armistice that ended World War I was signed on November 11th at 11:11 a.m. back in the day. But, you know, we call it Veterans Day, and we honor our veterans on that day. Well, Trump, of course, thinks veterans are suckers and losers. So there will be 7 Army bands at his birthday parade. There'll be a parachute jump by the Golden Knights. Civilian participants would include historical vehicles and aircraft and 2 bands, along with people from veterans groups, military colleges, and Civil War reenactors. Yes, without the Confederacy, you can't have a military parade, right? Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. I have a little more news for you. I'll share that with you on the other side of the break, and then I'll pick up your calls. It's 15 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program. Speaking the truth, J.D. Vance would really rather you didn't know. I'll be right back with you. Stay with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the place where despair is not an option. I'll be right back with your calls. And welcome back. Let's see here. There's our software, Roger in Seattle. Hey, Roger, what's on your mind today?
Thank you, Tom, for both you and your wife showing us how to protest, either if you have a radio show or a YouTube program or a poetic or musical bent. We could protest that way, but I'm hoping that maybe you'll encourage in one of your rants everybody support a Democrat, whether it's a dog catcher to the U.S. president in the next, well, even though it's a congressional, you know, mid-year,
right.
They could start lobbying for their favorite candidate for Senate or a president in 4 years from now.
Well, and there's elections going on all this year. Louise and I just got our Multnomah County, our county election forms. We've got a bunch of elections here in the county this week. Or this month, or whatever, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've mentioned on earlier comments to you that I think there's going to be a Goldwater type mid-year tsunami and wiping out all but the most, you know, entrenched Republicans, and there'll be a 12-year Democratic lock on all three branches, including kicking out or packing the court with Democrats. So, you know, I think even though things look bleak now, I'm looking forward to Democratic, you know, Earl Warren courts, as well as both, you know, solid Senate and President in the House.
I get it, Roger, and I'm inclined to agree with you. And, you know, from your lips to God's ears. Roger, thanks for the call. Spot on. It's a great way to protest Trump. Chris in Littleton, Colorado. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, good morning, Tom. America's worst enemies benefit by manipulating Trump. The Mideast and the big oil companies can destroy the planet for short-term oil mega profits. Z and China can pick up all the world trade that the U.S. lost to tariff taxes. Our economy will be bankrupt, and China will become the richest, most powerful country in the world. All authoritarian dictatorships can use Trump and America as an example of hatred and fascism. And Putin can benefit by taking over Ukraine and possibly NATO Europe. And all of America's enemies are able to learn top secret information from unsecure MAGA cell phones.
Yeah, including the presidents.
Yeah, and corrupt MAGA politicians won't stop Trump because they want paid off, too.
Yeah. No, I get it. I'm with you. So therefore what?
Well, I think we need to vote in a whole new bunch of politicians, like I agree with that last caller, mm-hmm. and we need to do major, major protests. I've already been to about a dozen of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to put more pressure on the Republicans and let them know that, you know,
yeah.
Trump's committing all these
crimes. The challenge is the young people. In the Canadian elections, young people actually overwhelmingly went for the right-winger. Or largely went for the right winger, whereas everybody else was voting for, you know, Mark Carney. So it's like apparently the algorithms on Facebook, X, YouTube, pushing right wing content are succeeding in brainwashing an entire generation of young people. It's amazing. Chris, thanks for the call. We'll be right back. Missed my opening rant today? It's usually published over at HartmanReport.com, where you can read it and share it with your friends for free. Check it out, HartmanReport.com. So a lot of people are wondering, why is it in America that we can't have nice things? Why don't we have, you know, the same things every other democracy has? Every other democracy in the world has a national health care system of some form, and everybody is covered. We don't. We've got 27 million uninsured people and over 100 million underinsured people. Why is that? Why is it that every other country in the world offers college education very inexpensively, if not for free, and for here you go to debt? Why is it that we've got our public schools crumbling and other countries are doing well? Why is it that we've got Medicare being taken apart by this Medicare Advantage scam and nobody will do anything about it? Well, it turns out the reason why it boils down to one thing, one Supreme Court decision, Citizens United, legalizing the bribery of our politicians. There's a whole rant about this over at HartmanReport.com. I think you're going to find it very, very useful. Check it out.
They don't kick down the door with boots. They slip in with a memo. Quiet as a loaded gun. Passed across the table. They say it's just procedure. Just a tweak in policy. But now reporters watch their backs like enemies of the state. They're coming for the truth tellers. The ones who shine the light. They're turning words into weapons. And facts into a fight. They're calling truth a felony. And justice treason's twin. They want fear in every newsroom so the silence can begin. No sirens in the distance. Just a knock that comes too late. A leaker in a prison cell. A journalist named threat to state. This isn't about protection. It's about control. They're rewriting what is sacred and selling off your soul. They're coming for the truth tellers. The ones who speak too loud. They're dragging conscience through the dirt to please the boss in power. They're hunting down the messengers while liars write the law. And if we don't stand up now, we'll lose it all to all. Call it what it is. This is how a strong man rises. This is how a free land falls in real time. One source, one voice, one warning at a time. They're coming for the truth tellers, but they don't scare alone. There's fire in the truth still left, and fury in our bones. We won't bow to their subpoenas. Or their threats dressed up as laws. We'll stand with those who risk it all. Because freedom
There you go, 24 minutes past the hour. Another major airline just cut U.S. flights due to low demand. This is information from travel agency Flight Center Travel Group Canada. They just published a report saying business travel from Canada to the United States fell 40% this year in the first 3 months. The U.S. Travel Association says even an estimated 10% reduction in Canadian tourism would lose 140,000 jobs in America, in the United States, and $2.1 billion. Air Canada has already started cutting flights to Washington, Houston, and Miami out of Vancouver. And also they're scrapping plans to run two daily flights between Montreal and San Francisco. So, you know, here we go. Canada, you know, when Mark Carney says that's it, you know, this relationship is broken. He was not joking. When asked about the impact on U.S. tourism, Trump told a reporter, it's not a big deal. 2 days later, he sat down with ABC. This is day before yesterday and said, tourism is way up. And Terry Moran, who was the ABC correspondent, said, no, it's not. Corrected him. He fixed his lie right on the air. We need more people like Terry Moran. A report from Tourism Economics says that international travel will probably drop 15%, although travel from Germany and Spain have already fallen 30 and 25% respectively. And that was in the month of March. We don't have the April figures yet. Canada, France, Belgium, Finland, Portugal, and the United Kingdom have all issued advisories warning their people that you may be detained at the U.S. border. The U.S. Customs people may take your telephones and your computers. Be very careful. Meanwhile, Trump says he wants to pull Harvard's nonprofit status. He said it's what they deserve. This was a rant this morning on his Nazi-infested social media site. He said, we're going to be taking away Harvard's tax-exempt status. It's what they deserve. Right. I mean, they're a school. Schools are tax-exempt. It's just really that simple. Plus, they do research. That's also tax-exempt. But he says he wants them taxed as a political organization. Why? Because they dared to say to him, no, you cannot control our curriculum. You cannot control who we hire. You cannot control who we admit as students. We are not going to put you in charge of Harvard, Mr. Trump. And so Trump is just, he's throwing a hissy fit. And he's threatening them with the Internal Revenue Service. And it's going to be real interesting to see if the toady that he's put in charge of the IRS actually follows through on this and pulls Harvard's nonprofit status. Because you know, if he does, the minute he does, it'll be before the Supreme Court. And that's going to be real interesting, too. Meanwhile, Bob Kennedy is messing with the vaccines. We may not have an updated COVID vaccine this fall, one that's, you know, appropriate for the strains that are now traveling around. I'll tell you about that on the other side of the break, and I'll pick up your calls on Anything Goes Weekend.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, right here. I'll be right back with you.
Our book today is The Women's Suffrage Movement, edited by Sally Roche Wagner. It is a collection of essays by a whole variety of people, from Gloria Steinem to, you know, onward. This is from the foreword. With the women's suffrage movement, Sally Roche Wagner has given us a unique gift, the real words and actions, writings and debates of white and black women who fought for over a century to gain an identity as free human beings and citizens. For most of those years, black women were legally owned as chattel, forced to work and to suffer the unique punishment of giving birth to children who were also enslaved. White women were not as restricted and endangered as African women or men, but as the daughters and wives of white men, they were also legal chattel, with no right to leave their homes, disobey orders, profit from their own work, speak in public, have custody of their own children, own property without a guardian, or affect the patriarchal laws that governed their lives. Even many white men who fought against slavery supported the subordinate position of their wives and daughters. When Susan B. Anthony, an abolitionist and a suffragist, sheltered not only runaway slaves, but white wives escaping violent husbands, male abolitionist allies warned her that she was going too far. As Frederick Douglass, a freed slave, abolitionist, and suffragist himself, wrote in his autobiography, "When the true history of the anti-slavery cause shall be written, women will occupy a large space in its pages, for the cause of the slave has been peculiarly women's cause." And this despite the fact that many white women, especially not only in the South, aided and abetted black slavery and accepted their own subordinate position as natural. A century later, Gunnar Myrdal would explain in his landmark study of slavery that enslaved African women and men brought to these shores had been given the legal status of wives as the nearest and most natural analogy to the status of slaves. As he added, the parallel between women and Negroes is the deepest truth of American life, for together they form the unpaid or underpaid labor on which America runs, end quote. Wagner takes us into the rooms, writings, and discussions where white and black women and black men, all fighting for legal personhood and full citizenship, were both a miracle of shared purpose, despite all the lethal forces keeping them apart, and a tragedy of division that echoes in the need for intersectionality and inclusion in this day. Even the lynching of black men, crimes designed to maintain the racial order after the Civil War, was most often justified by proximity to white women, however imaginary or freely chosen. This tells us how dangerous and brave was the coalition for universal adult suffrage that you will read about here. It also reveals the betrayal when white men split the coalition apart by offering the vote to black men first, only to then limit their votes with poll taxes, impossible literacy tests, and violence. Yet despite this tragic division, and despite being labeled as varying degrees of non-human, this fractious rebellion and fragile coalition did eventually succeed in gaining citizenship for the majority of people in this country. Wagner brings us these imperfect and hopeful rebellions of the past as they happened, complete with divisions and debates and a long organizational disagreement among suffragists about whether to seek the vote by federal amendment or state by state. She doesn't attempt to prove a thesis or to explain mistakes or to excuse destructive divisions. Other than the first and last chapters, each one with a very specific purpose, she doesn't insert herself at all. Instead, she allows us to witness the words and acts, dreams and disappointments, victories and defeats, visionary ideas and tactical errors of people fighting a battle that laid the basis for our continuing movement against hierarchies based on race and gender. It is this faithfulness to the past that allows us to learn lessons for changes in the present. In 30 years or so, this will no longer be a majority white country. It will better reflect the diversity that has always been its strength and its promise. Indeed, the first generation that is majority babies of color has already been born, and public opinion polls already show that the majority of Americans no longer support divisions by race or by gender. Yet there is also a lethal backlash from about a third of the country, including over half of white married women, among the often those without a college education, who want to preserve their unearned place in the social and economic hierarchy. That's why these victories and defeats of the past become the best possible lessons and warnings for our present and future. By taking us into the rooms where history happened, Wagner allows us to see the parallels and differences, empathy and estrangements, connections and isolations that can hinder or help our goals now. Almost none of the people we will meet in these pages will live to celebrate the changes they are working for. This should tell us that social justice movements are not a temporary part of our lives. They are our lives. Most of the activists here were not sure that slavery would be abolished or that universal adult suffrage would ever succeed. This should give us humility about what we can predict and also arm us with faith and patience. Few guessed that the legal right to vote would come a half century later for white and black women than for black men, but would be mostly on paper. In the South, where most black Americans live, it would take another century plus an entire civil rights movement to overcome procedural and sometimes lethal barriers to voting. This should make us skeptical about changes that come from the top and that divide us more than empower us. And there are other lessons, and it continues. The Women's Suffrage Movement, it's a collection of essays edited by Sally Roche Wagner.
Did
Did you know that every weekday we send out an email before the show giving you all the topics coming up so you could be fully informed and ready to interact with our program? Or that after the show we send out Sue's Stack, a list of every topic I've discussed along with clickable hot links to every source of information I've shared with you on the air? It's all completely free and available over at tom.tv, T-H-O-M.tv. Check it out.
Since the last world war, we said never again, but look what's in store. The rich got their cuts, the poor got ignored. Now the wolves are back and they're scratching the door. Is the Second Republican Great Depression knocking at America's door? Tariffs and lies with the truth in recession, and greed like we've never seen before. Is this the crash they've been waiting for? Is the Second Great Depression at our door?
35 minutes past the hour. So let me explain how vaccine approvals work. If you're rolling out a brand new vaccine, hey, we've figured out a cure for the common cold. We've got a vaccine for the common cold, or we've got a vaccine for pimples, or, you know, something. Something that there's not a vaccine for right now. If you claim to have come up with a vaccine that will prevent or cure a particular condition, you have to go through a lengthy and rigorous process to prove, first off, that it's safe. You start out with the safety trials, you know, and then to prove that it's actually effective. And the effective trials are typically done with what's called placebo control. In other words, you know, 50 people get the vaccine, the real vaccine, 50 people get a salt water, a saline shot, not knowing if they got, and nobody knows if they got the vaccine or not. And then you let those people go out in the wild and expose themselves to pimples or the common cold. And, when you're all done, you can say, oh, well, look at this. The people with the vaccine got half as much of the disease as the people who didn't, you know, who got the saline shot. The process can take a year. It can take 2 or 3 years, in fact. Typically, at the very least, it takes around 6 or 8 months to do these, you know, trials that are placebo-controlled trials. On the other hand, when you're going to update a vaccine, which we do every year with the flu vaccine, for example, and have for most of my lifetime. So when you're going to update a vaccine, because you're just dealing with a virus that mutates, but the vaccine itself is essentially identical, except that, you know, you're just changing the you know, you're recognizing the small changes in the DNA of the proteins or of the pathogen. Then you just update the vaccine. I mean, you don't have to redo the safety and efficacy trials because you already know that this vaccine works and you already know it works, you know, safely. So you just update it and, you know, there are some trials associated with the update. You want to make sure that it actually works against that strain. But those, you know, typically just take a couple months. In fact, really, they just take a few weeks. You give somebody the shot and you take their blood titers and measure whether they've, you know, developed an immunity to that particular condition. So along comes Bob Kennedy, no fan of vaccines. And he says, well, if we're going to have updated COVID vaccines, they've got to go through placebo-controlled trials as if they were brand new vaccines. So this fall, as the new COVID strains start really hitting us, and, I haven't heard if he's going to do this with flu vaccines, too, but, I mean, why not? Anyhow, this fall, as the new COVID strains start hitting us, we may not have a vaccine. That's how weird these, I mean, the brainworm has gotten him, I'm telling you. It's 38 minutes past the hour. Paul in Annapolis, Maryland. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Been listening to you forever.
Well, thank
First
you.
Time I got enough courage to call in. And I think I might have something that nobody ever talks about, might be of interest to your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about money. And most people don't understand where money comes from. It's just like it's there. but they don't question where it comes from, or they have misconceptions. It doesn't come from the Fed, doesn't come from Fort Knox, it doesn't come from the Treasury. And we need about $2 trillion per year of new money injected in the economy as our productivity increases.
Right. It's created through the fractional banking system. It's created by people borrowing money.
Exactly. And you never hear anything about that, because money is just created by banks when they lend. And there's a theory out there that's kind of false. It's called the loanable funds theory, where people think that banks take savers' money and lend it out. That's not the way it really works.
Like a 10-to-1 ratio or something against reserves. In fact, well, I think it's more like 90 to 1.
Yeah, that doesn't even apply anymore. They've changed the rules so that there's no reserve ratio
and
anymore.
And this is also why recessions are so problematic, because not only does the economy shrink, but the demand for credit shrinks. People start paying off loans. And what that does is it reduces the money supply.
Exactly. It's a very difficult concept for people to wrap their heads around. And this is usually where people's eyes glaze over. They just can't believe that banks create our money. And, you know, the thing is, this is the way the whole banking system was designed from the Bank of England back in the 1690s, where banks, that's how money was created, and actually works to some extent.
Yeah, it probably goes back to ancient Sumeria, actually, Paul. I mean, there's evidence of fractional banking, fractional reserve banking systems, literally, in the ancient times.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think the Bank of England is kind of a precursor to our modern banking system. They're modeled after that.
Yeah.
But the problem with it is, even though it works, it has dire social consequences, and it's a major driver of inequality.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a game of musical chairs, you know, because...
Well, if you think about it, banks create money for the most creditworthy. And who are the most creditworthy? Those are the people who already have money.
Right, who don't need the credit.
Flow. Yeah, I mean, there's a flow. This money being pumped to the people who already have money. And the natural, it's kind of a no-brainer. The natural consequence of that is wealth inequality. It just has to result. That has to be the result.
Yeah. And, although there's a whole bunch of policy things that you can do that exacerbate or ameliorate inequality. The principal one being taxation, but secondary ones being all that stuff that we call the social safety net.
Absolutely. Those things are kind of on the back end, but when you understand that there's also an undercurrent forcing money towards the wealthy.
Yeah. No, I completely get it. Paul, great topic, a great little educational segment for our listeners. I truly appreciate your calling and sharing it.
Can I point people to one website?
Sure.
It's the Alliance for Just Money, and it's also there's the NEED Act, which was introduced by Kucinich and Conyers in 2011. Mm-hmm. Definitely great reading, and they basically want to end bank money creation and restore the greenback, which I know you know a lot about.
Oh, Lincoln's, yeah.
That's the only time in our history where the government created money.
Yeah.
So, and it worked.
Yeah. Yeah. Fascinating stuff,
thanks,
Paul. It's fascinating stuff. Paul, thank you very much for the call. It's great to hear from you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Carlos in Carson, California. Hey, Carlos, what's on your mind today?
Well, listen, I'm concerned about the rates in fire policies here in California. My policy just doubled here by
your home insurance policy?
Farmers. Yeah, my fire policies, yes.
Uh-huh.
They just doubled, and I'm talking to other people. Some policies that I talked to doubled also. And yet, State Farm is dragging his feet on paying off on fire policies in the burnt areas here in Los Angeles.
Of course they are.
There's a lot of people complaining that they haven't even been approached about by any agent or anything like that. They haven't had a talks with anybody about getting paid off on their fire policies. A lot of people still living in shelters. And, you know, that leads me to a thought of what Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum says. Eventually, you will own nothing but be happy. Mm. Is this where this is leading to? Where our expenditures on our property are going to keep going up and up and up, until we cannot afford to pay our properties or maintain our properties, and we're going to be herded into the small units of 15-minute cities. Is that where we're headed? I think so.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, and this is a great opportunity for the vulture capitalists. And the insurance companies are fleeing. And then to compound all this, Musk just gutted FEMA, and the Republicans want to cut FEMA's budget radically. And what that's going to do, since FEMA is involved in not just remediation, but in some cases actually, planning for disasters and helping people prepare for disasters, which diminishes the impact and thus diminishes the insurance, the need for, insurance reimbursements, doing away with FEMA, as Trump, or not doing away altogether, but largely doing away with FEMA, as Trump and Musk are trying to do, is going to further drive up your insurance costs, because more and more of that burden is going to be falling on insurance companies rather than on the federal government. Carlos, thanks for the report from Los Angeles, or from Carson, California. I'm so sorry to hear that your fire insurance, your home insurance, has doubled in price. Not surprised, but sorry to hear it. This is where government should intervene.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. I'll be right back with your calls. And welcome back. Jeff in San Francisco. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
I just want to probably continue with that money discussion. There was a great article written, it was in February. It's called "The World Bank and IMF Await Elon Musk." And Walden Bello wrote it in February 24th, 2025, from Common Dreams, and just talking about how much money we could save if we went after the World Bank and IMF. Because they currently, pretty much destroying the global south, because we give them about $117 billion in 2024 to loan to these, the whole deal.
Yeah. Which raises the question, Jeff, if the IMF and the World Bank were to stop loaning money to third world countries. I mean, I get the criticism. 9 times out of 10, they loan for these massive projects that are boondoggles and, mostly just enrich the local oligarchs and families and all that. I get all that. But there are, a lot of loans from the IMF and the World Bank that actually serve good purposes, building hospitals and schools and things like that. If you want to do away with that, what are you going to replace it with?
Well, how about clean it up? I'm just
Yeah, I'm all in favor of cleaning it up.
I mean, how about lowering the interest rates? How about giving them loans to clean up plastic? But it's usually for finding new oil. How about, for educate? Because they really brain drain these countries. These people go to Harvard, and then they get these big jobs working at, and then go back to their own countries and kind of screw over the poor some more, which is kind of a play a violin, but, we should be fighting for some justice, because I'm big into public banking here in California. Mm-hmm. I've called you several times about it. We did pass that. They're really greenwashing the hell out of it.
Yeah.
Well, and of course I'm a little too busy to go to all the meetings. Yeah,
I get it, Jeff. I totally get it. And I would love to see some reforms there. Jeff, thanks for bringing that up. It's an important topic. Thank you. Joe in Seattle. Hey, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My concern is this mineral deal with Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of curious of what your thoughts were on it.
Well, I think given Trump's particular or peculiar psychopathologies, he views everything as a business deal. And he views everything as something where he wins and somebody else has to lose. So by saying that if Ukraine is going to continue to get weaponry from the United States, they're going to have to pay for it by giving us some of their rare earth minerals or things like that. If that's what it takes to get the United States to insert itself into this war, I'm all in favor of it. My guess is that there's a lot of empty rhetoric here. This agreement does not include a security guarantee for Ukraine, so it's nothing Ukraine can depend upon. I see it as a small step forward. I think that my guess is it was something that was more symbolic than real, that Trump did this, but he doesn't really intend to stab Putin in the back. He's not going to do that. He's talking tough, and Putin is laughing. Putin knows what's going on. Putin knows that Trump is never going to hurt him, is never going to betray him. Whatever Putin has on Trump has got to be huge. And, you know, it could just be 40 years of, you know, his business not surviving were it not for Russian money, mostly Russian mob money. And, of course, you know, Putin is the biggest of the Russian mobsters. So, you know, but who knows? But, yeah. Joe, thanks for the call. Spot on. We'll be right back. It is, 11 minutes before the hour. I'll be back with you in 60 seconds.
Give Tom Hartman a call. We currently have no callers on for Tom Hartman. I know we can do better than that. 818-985-5735 and pledge your support for this program.
Our daily song is now available on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, Tidal, Deezer, iHeartRadio, and a whole bunch of other platforms. Just look for songs by Louise and Tom Hartman. Check it out.
Trump in the wings with the lights going black. Script in his fist, no plan to come back. The White House a set, the flag just a prop. Truth takes a bullet, the cameras don't stop. He's never been real, but the danger is true. He's gambling with lives for a headline or two. The audience cheers as the nation breaks down. He laughs at the fire as he melts off the crown.
We do have one caller on the line, 818-985-5735.
Stony Brook, New York. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for the taking my call, Tom. I really appreciate your work. You commented earlier in the program about the time for niceties is over, and I am I believe I have a plan that takes the gloves off.
Okay.
You know this better than anyone, that how the Republicans got control of the House was that they cheat. And basically, I have a plan. It's called Give Blue Its Due, and it's a nonprofit to end red state gerrymandering or to start blue state gerrymandering. We were nice, but we unilaterally disarmed, and basically they cheat to win. We love Bernie and AOC. They have rousing public meetings and things like this, and that's a wonderful thing. It's beginning to generate a lot of attention to the cause. But I come from an extensive military training, and in the military, sometimes you're giving up ground, but you've got to fall back strategically and have a counteroffensive. And this is the only counteroffensive in the U.S. There's nothing else that takes the fight to the Republicans. And my proposal would be that the governors of blue states tell the governors of red states they either have to un-gerrymander their states or we're going to gerrymander our states.
And yeah, the Republicans won't pay any attention to that. They won't even believe it's a serious challenge, you know.
Yeah.
So, I'm with you, Bruce. I think the blue states should be gerrymandering right now. As long as it's legal, they should gerrymander the hell out of them. If California gerrymandered the same way that Indiana has, we would have five or six more Democrats in the House of Representatives, and the House would be in Democratic hands right now.
Yes, and California in the next census is going to lose three Congress people. New York is going to lose two. Massachusetts is going to lose one, and there's more. And all these congressional things are going to the red states. So J.D. Pritzker said, you know, we really need to get out of our comfort zone. I've been trying to sell this concept. And Democrats are very conservative. They knock on doors, they ring bells, and they don't go beyond this. And we need to take the gloves off.
No, we need a blue equivalent of red map. You know, that was the program that was rolled out in 2010 when this geeky science guy, this geeky computer science guy, figured out how to gerrymander right down to the individual house level, and they redid the red maps on a dozen or so red states, and those states are now gerrymandered to the point where even with overwhelming Democratic statewide victories, and you see this in, for example, Kentucky that has a Democratic governor, North Carolina that has a Democratic governor, Louisiana that has regularly had Democratic governors. Even when Democrats are winning statewide, you still are sending, a congressional delegation that is three quarters Republicans, and the state House and Senate are overwhelmingly controlled by Republicans, even though the majority of people in the state vote for Democrats. Hey, it's the KPFK fundraiser. 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And KPFK is in need of your support. Thanks so much for listening to our program, for supporting our program. KPFK is one of our biggest radio affiliates, and it's important to our listeners. We really appreciate you, and I know that you really appreciate KPFK. So here's your opportunity. Here's your chance to reach out to KPFK. Let them know what you're thinking. Let them know the programming that you really like, and help them out. Help them keep this station on the air. Help them keep this show on the air. We have just this massive level of corruption in the federal government. We've got a political crisis. We have now geopolitical crises, happening. The United States relationship with China, with Russia, with other countries, our relationship with NATO and the European Union, all of it is in a crisis because of the Trump presidency. And I get that as a consequence of that, there are some really great politicians who are asking you for help and for money. There are some really great causes and organizations that are asking you for help and money. But the media is like critical stuff. I mean, there's a reason why the media was carved out in the First Amendment as essentially the fourth branch of government, why it's sometimes referred to as the fourth estate, because the media is how we inform people so they can actually participate in democracy. And here is the media right here, KPFK. You are listening to one of the most important voices in the media, KPFK, this radio station. And they're certainly worthy of your support, as worthy as any politician or any other cause out there. And in many cases, more so. So please, I get it. People are upset. They're fed up. They're angry. They're freaked out. A lot of us are. And we all want to feel like, hey, can I do something about this? Well, yeah, you are not powerless. You can help by making sure that progressive voices are still on the air in Southern California, in Los Angeles, keeping KPFK going. You can do that by calling right now, 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, or go to kpfk.org and become a member of the station or renew your membership. And perhaps most important, if you can become a member of the KPFK Sustainers Circle, that's where you commit to make a particular donation every month. That's really important stuff because it allows the radio station to budget. It allows them to know in advance, well, this is how many people are going to be giving $10 a month or $50 a month or whatever it may be. And therefore, we know what our cash flow is going to be like. It's really hard to run a business not having any idea what your cash flow is going to be, particularly when the world is being roiled by crises, political crisis, and the rise of fascism in the United States, all of which are interrupting people's ability to earn a living, their economic security, their political security, their community security, their health safety. All of that stuff is like just in total upheaval right now, which is why KPFK is literally more important than ever before. We absolutely have to have progressive media in this country. There is way too little of it. We need to keep KPFK on the air in Southern California, and that means calling now, 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, 5735, or 818-985-KPFK. Call now and support this station. This KPFK has been here for you. KPFK needs your help now. So please call 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Whatever you can afford, whatever you're doing, pause for a moment and give them a shout. They're trying to raise $500,000 to keep this great community resource thriving and to keep great programming on KPFK. My contribution to the station, we provide this show absolutely free. Doesn't cost the station a penny.
And we do this with all of our Pacifica affiliates. We pay for it ourselves for the cost of production and distribution through the advertising side, through our commercial stations. So, you know, we're committed to KPFK. Those of us who work on this show, I'm committed to KPFK. Would you please become committed to KPFK? Will you join me in making a contribution to KPFK? You can do it with even a very small contribution, even $5 or $10 a month. Or if you can afford it, a much more substantial contribution. I know that there are people listening.